This is a View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for KingdomTheGiants.com. Today is Tuesday, the 5th of February, 2019. I'm David McGimsey. Apologies, first of all, for Paddy not being here. I understand you're usually the better, but it's Paddy's tonight. I'll give it my absolute best and we'll just roll with the mistakes. If you want to get in touch with us, well, go right ahead. There's literally loads of ways you can do it. Old school emails, podcast@KingdomTheGiants.com, Twitter @AVFTB, Instagram, all the modern ones, Jules Runs. You've got the Bake Book, the Snapchat, the Grindr, all the other usual places. But let's get on with the show. And we're going to kick it off slightly differently this week, as Paddy isn't here and I've kind of lost control already. So we're going to start with the fan agenda, brought to you in association with our very good friends at Belfast Giants TV. So let's introduce the panel. Boomerang Corner call him the Ginger Jesus. The coach calls him Boxy. His mum calls him Jonathan. Can you guess who it is? Welcome to the show, Josh Roach. No, it's actually John Boxy. Boxy, thanks very much for joining us.
Absolutely, I'm happy to be here. That was one of the best entrances I think I've ever had, so thank you for that.
And sat to my right, as always, is international hockey legend, all-round top guy. It's Simon Kitchen. Good evening.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Not bad. And I was going to introduce Joe, but he hasn't turned up, so maybe he'll drop along later in the show. Lads, let's get stuck right in. Boxy, it's hard to believe there's only like 7 or 8 weeks of the regular season left, and it's getting tight at the top again. If we'd been offered this position, you know, back in August, would have snapped your arm off for it.
Oh, 100%. And I had a couple conversations with some people after the game this weekend, and I think as a player and anyone, a fan or anyone who's involved in the organization, all you can really ask for is to have, you know, the potential of winning the league and it being really your own destiny, not having to rely on other teams. And with us kind of obviously having this recent success this past weekend and how tight it is now, and obviously those two games against Cardiff, I mean, there's clearly a long way to go, but just the fact that we have the potential to do it kind of on our own, that's all you can ask for. It's never fun when you're constantly looking at out of town scores or anything like that. Now, granted, that still happens anyway because you kind of keep an eye on what's happening around the league with Cardiff. But just the fact we have the destiny in our own hands now, that's huge.
Sometimes tweets and that kind of thing don't age very well. And I was looking for stuff to do with AVFTB today. And way back in July, we were looking at tweets of people saying, this team can't do anything this season once again because of the long road swing we had to go on. We debated that backwards and forwards, you know, can that be a galvanising thing for the team? But look, essentially, we came out of that road swing really, really in a good position. We talk about trying to be in touch on the 1st of January with the top of the league after that road swing, and we were slightly better than that. It was a good time for the club.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that road trip. As a player, I think it's good as well. You use the term, I think you said galvanise it. I think as a group, it was huge for us because, you know, with all due respect, there's a lot of new players that come in here, a lot of different personalities, and anytime you have a winning environment, guys want like each other. And I think being on the road for as long as we were, it kind of gives you the opportunity to get to know people a bit better and you kind of build those friendships. And that's what it takes to win championships. You have to want to do it for the guy you're sat next to. I know these are rather cliche things I'm saying, but, you know, as a group, it really galvanized us and brought us together. So, and obviously with the success that we had, it was a special environment to be in. So you know, we just need to make sure that we take what we can from the success that we've had over that period and kind of, you know, ride that momentum, because when we are playing well and, you know, playing the way we were for those few months, we're a very, very good hockey team.
Boxy, 60 years as a pro now. You spent a couple of years in Nottingham. Obviously, your third season now as a Giant was with a stop off in Milton Keynes in between. Over 300 games in the Elite League now. You're considered a bit of a veteran now, because there's guys in that team that, I mean, even you were here a couple of years ago, you're one of the youngest guys in the group. But being in the room now and having that experience, how do you portray yourself? Do you try and pass that on to some of the younger guys?
Yeah, it's funny. I'm living with Hookie this year, and obviously I've known Hookie for a while. I've played with him briefly in Nottingham. He came and played a couple games for us in the Champions League, and you saw at a young age, even when he was flying around out there with a cage on, how, you know, he was going to be a good player. But living with him this year, and you know, I've mentioned before, I truly believe Hookie has the potential to be a full-time top six guy in this league, and I think that his dedication away from the rink and how he carries himself at such a young age. He really does have the potential to be, you know, a Robert Dowd or someone like that, or a David Clark. You know, he has that potential, or Robert Farmer or someone like that. And by him making the choice to come here, and I was in kind of an awkward spot because I didn't have a contract at the time, but he reached out to me and asked me about Belfast, etc. And then he made the decision to come here, and then I had the opportunity to come as well. So it was a good opportunity for me to come over here and by living with him. But yeah, no, going back to what you're saying about being a veteran guy, this is the thing. I remember my first year in Nottingham, someone said to me, just enjoy it because it flies by. And it is insane to think that, you know, this is my sixth year pro. It seems like just yesterday I was a young guy in the league and trying to, you know, make a name for yourself. But I look back on it and think of the places I've played, the people I've played with, and all the experience I have, and being in Belfast as long as I have, I'm very, very lucky. So, I'm very happy with how my career has gone so far. So I'm very lucky.
I'm going to jump on to some of the questions we've had off Twitter. One from Stevie1601. What's the scoop on PK Subban? PK Subban. You kept that one quiet. You haven't really. You've talked about it before. But how do you know PK?
So from the age of about 5 until 17, every Christmas for a week and every summer for about minimum of three weeks, I used to go over to Canada and do hockey schools over there. And him and I are the same age. And we basically, long story short, did the same hockey school almost a month a year together. And we formed a pretty good friendship there. We stayed in touch throughout that period of time. There's a couple of times I used to stay with his family, and we just always kind of kept in touch. He's a very, people ask me what's he like in real life, or was he like that when he was younger, and he is exactly like he is, as people see on TV. He's just a big personality, comes from a very good family, and we've just always been good friends. Obviously now he's a very, very, you know, big NHL player, so we don't talk as much as we used to. But when I was living in the States, we kept in touch quite a lot. And a few years ago, when he was over in London, we got together and had a good night together. And whenever we're kind of in the same neck of the woods, when he was playing in Montreal, I was playing college, I used to go up there all the time and see him. So, but no, he's just a good guy, and we've always kind of kept in touch. And it's crazy to think that his career has panned out. But from a very young age, he was a very, very, very good hockey player, and he worked really, really hard. So he's done very well for himself. But the stuff he does away from the rink, all his charity work, that's something that he should definitely be proud of. But he's a friend I've had for quite a long time, and we still speak and keep in touch. And it was great to see that Ethan got to meet him when he was over there, and I think they talked a little bit about the Giants. So no, it's good. It's good to kind of keep those friendships and relationships, because they're important.
I know Paddy wouldn't forgive me. I'm sure he would have liked to have been here himself to tell you this, but he goes on about this a lot. Whenever they were over, was it the Gardner Cup? It's about 2010, says, over in Edinburgh?
Yeah, 2008, 2009, yeah.
2009, how time flies. PK was obviously over, and he was at the bar trying to get a pint, and Paddy says, I'll get these ones, and he says, dead on, I'll get the next ones, and he drunk up and headed on. So Paddy says he owes him a pint. That's 10 years now. So the next time you're talking to him, if you can tell him to cash that in, Paddy wants his pint. So,
yeah, I'll let him know.
Sure. But look, it's been a bit of a change in the locker room this week. Jordan Smotherman has obviously came in, and unfortunately for Bish is hanging the skates up and going to take a job on off the ice. Bit of a word for both of them.
Yeah, first of all, I mean, I cannot speak highly enough about Bish as a person. I mean, obviously things potentially didn't pan out the way that he was hoping for here in Belfast. But I mean, if anybody ever asked me for a reference on Bish, which does happen a lot in hockey, you know, it's such a crazy world how it's all interconnected. People say, oh, you played with this guy, what's he like? La, la, la. And one thing I'd always say about Bish is that no matter what his situation was in the lineup, ice time, how his game was, anything, he was one of the most positive, friendly, best team guys I truly mean that. You know, it's easy in situations. I've had it in my career where you're frustrated about your position or how your game is, and that can kind of take away from you as a person and as a teammate. It's a team sport, but at the end of the day, we're all kind of you know, you're fighting for your contract and your career, etc. And that can lead guys down a certain path. But no matter what Bish's situation or how the team was, etc., he was a team first guy, and he was a first class friend and person. So I wish him nothing but the best, and I know he's going to be great as a coach because he has those people skills. And I can't speak highly enough about him as a person. I'm sure you guys, with your interactions, felt the same way about Bish.
Talk about Bish later in the show. I've got a very, very soft spot for Bish. I thought he was, you know, things didn't work out for him, but all the things you've said, the intangibles that he brought to the rink off the ice as well, were, you know, first class guy. But here, hopefully this isn't too hard a subject to talk about. Obviously, coming at the end of the postseason and into the summer period, the Team GB obviously have great opportunity in Division One this year. Is that still something that you're hankering? You really, really hope to get into that squad?
Yeah, I mean, we spoke earlier about being a kind of an older guy and playing a few years in the league. And one thing I've learned is if you focus too much on things, i.e., you know, oh, I need to get a certain amount of points, I need to get a contract, I need to do this, I need to do that to me, it never works out well for you. You just have to worry about the team. And once again, it sounds cliche, but there would be nothing good about me getting stressed and being thinking, oh, you know, I didn't make the game against Riga or anything like that. It's obviously in the back of my mind. I'd be lying if I say it wasn't. It would be unbelievable to play in those games. But what will be, what is what will be. You know, I know Pete and Kiefer and those guys are going to pick the best players for the roles. And all you can do as a player is just do what you can and hope for the best. But if you allow it to affect you in a negative way, and you allow it to get uptight and get, you know, stressed about it, nothing good comes from it. So I spoke to Hookie today and kind of asked how he was doing, because I think it'd be great for him to be involved in that. And I know Swinney and Garth are over there doing well, so it'd be interesting to see how they do. But on a personal level, you know, it'd be a real honor to kind of play for GB again. It was a great experience when I played for it in those three tournaments. But I'd be lying if I said I haven't thought about it, but I'm really trying to just focus on enjoying my time in Belfast and winning. It's, you know, realize, as you said, when you get older, winning is the most important thing. You know, I won a championship my first year in the league, and I haven't won anything since. So I've come close a couple of times, but that's truly, and I mean that honestly, that's what all I really focus on this year is winning championships.
Well, then let's bring it back to that. You know, this last few weeks, scoring goals, helping break records, going back into Milton Keynes, getting the two goals, getting a terrific reception, which you always seem to do there, which must be nice on a personal level as well, and chipping in with that goal that will forever be on your CV as the goal that helped Colin Shields break the all-time scoring record in the Elite League.
Yeah, no, it was, first and foremost, it's a real honour to be able to say that you had anything to do with that. So just that in itself, you knew Sheds wanted to make it happen. You could see before the game that he was very focused, and he realized the opportunity he had and to be out there and put the puck in the net. And, you know, the first thing, I didn't even think about celebrating. I just thought, where is that puck? I know Shedsy shot that. I need to get that for him. So, it's a great thing that he's been able to do that, and going back into Milton Keynes. And, you know, the fans there are, there's one thing I'll always say about the fans there, no matter what the team result was, or, you know, the situation we had last year and obviously the team this year, the fans always, you know, they've never once turned on you. So, that's one thing I will say about the fans of Milton Keynes, is they're good people, and that's certainly nice, especially with potentially the situation that the team's going through this year. So that's a good thing, that they're sticking by the players and trying to support with them as much as they can.
Boxy, we're going to finish off with a quick fire question round. We've done it a few times now in the last few weeks, and a few guests we've had on. Your wee mate Jasmine Kitchen has put these together, and she's got some questions for you. First of all, she said you have to answer this one. Can you do the floss?
I can't do it, but I need to learn it.
She'll teach you. Would you rather be super fast or super strong?
Super fast.
Most famous person you've took a selfie with?
Most famous person I've taken a selfie with. Rory McIlroy.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Favorite actor?
Christian Bale.
Can you speak any other language?
I used to be a lot better at French. When I was younger, I was almost fluent, and then I didn't speak it for a long time and lost it, and then I lived with a French Canadian and picked it up again. So I can hold somewhat of a conversation with Besco and those guys.
What's your favorite karaoke song?
Justin Bieber, anything.
And which emoji do you use the most?
Probably the thumbs up. It's just a classic. You and I did a couple of thumbs up when we were texting earlier.
We did, actually. We did. No problem. Listen, as always, we really appreciate your time, mate. You're absolute top lad. And I know you'll be looking forward to the games this weekend and obviously the rest of the season.
100%. Thanks, guys.
And thanks again to Johnny Boxo for coming on there. Great chat with him and best luck to him for the rest of the season. A good season for boxing means a good season for the Belfast Giants, and I guess that's what we all want. But he's came along better late than never. Welcome along. That's the real deal, Joel Neal.
How's that for a fashionable entrance, boys? Fashionably late. Sorry about that. Good evening. How's everybody?
Well, I'm sure Johnny Boxo probably thinks you don't like him now, but as we were expecting you 20 minutes ago. But not to worry, mate, not to worry. Well, we're going to crack on and we're going to talk about the weekend past. The games on Saturday and Sunday against Coventry and Nottingham. And we'll start with the Coventry game. Goals from Jonathan Ferdinand, Patrick Dwyer, Kenan McFaul, Dustin Johnner, Josh Roach, and that absolutely fabulous goal by Darcy Murphy, which I'm sure we'll come on to, meant the Giants ran out 6-5 winners in what was quite an enthralling game. Let's go to you, Simon.
Saturday night's game, Coventry, we get off to a great start. We're 3-0 up, and then we stop moving our feet. End of first period, we hardly come out for the second. They get a bit of momentum by scoring a goal. We can come back at them. Johnner gets a power play marker to make it 4-1. And then again, we just stop skating. There was not enough effort. The boys just, turned the puck over too easy. And Adam had a real go at them at the end of that second period. We all know what he can get like with his temper. And I'm sure it was hot and fiery in that dressing room. And coming out, the boys, again, they go down 5-4, short-handed goal for, I think it was Ross Venus. And then we react again. And having to come from behind, Josh Roach with a great power play marker. And as you said at the start there, Davey, Darcy's goal going coast to coast again. The kid's just unbelievable. I think that was his 37th of the season. He's been brilliant this year. I enjoyed calling that goal on Giants TV. And again, for me, at that Saturday game, I thought that we definitely looked as if with the energy okay after the week before. We looked tired in that games against the Tuesday night game against Glasgow, so played a lot of hockey, 4 games in 5 nights the weekend before, coming back only 2-2, which was great, and both of them at home, no travelling. I thought we thoroughly deserved the win. We talked about the whole game as a whole. The only thing I was really disappointed at was the hit on Pat Dwyer. The officials got together, called a 2-minute kneeing call or tripping call or something, which is just absolutely ridiculous. And the bit that was really, really annoyed me was nobody jumped in. That really got to me. And I said it at the time, somebody's got to grab that guy and just, ragdoll him if they have to. It was ridiculous hit. Patty's out now for hopefully not for too long. It definitely looked a sore one at the time, but overall, we absolutely deserved a win. It's always good to get a goalie rattled from everybody cheering behind them. And your man Hackett's played in the NHL 5-6 years ago, but he looked like a fish out of water at times against the Belfast Giants on Saturday night.
Joel, as Simon says, we're in a 4-goal lead there after sort of 30 minutes, and maybe guilty of taking the foot off the gas, that late goal, you were talking about it last week as well, a late goal in the period, it leaves us with the third period with a lot more work to do than perhaps we needed to.
Yeah, unfortunately, I felt, I think, all too familiar. You ran up that early lead, and as you boys say, just went static. We were defensively very loose, very fragmented. There was nothing that looked together. I said at the end of the game report on Kingdom of the Giants, at the end of it, win pretty, win ugly, just win. But oh boy, we won ugly. I think we were maybe lucky to get out of that. In general, a chaotic game. I mean, that third period alone, I think there were something like 8 penalties. Although it doesn't matter, you know what? This is a game that brought the gap on the Devils down to 3 points. And you're never going to look back and say, well, that was an ugly win. You're just going to see 2 points over the Coventry Blaze. There are issues that I think we need to address that I think the coach and the team are fully aware we need to address going forward. And those are defensively. There's nothing wrong at the moment with our press, the fact that we're pushing hard, we're coming up with clutch goals, we're scoring plenty, but it's just that sort of defensive reliability that we're missing. And on any other given night, you could have thrown that game away whenever the ice started to tilt in favour of the Coventry Blaze. You know, thankfully we didn't. Hackett, I don't know, I was expecting much more from a guy that played in the NHL and has, you know, really good AHL numbers. He was all over the place. I'm not sure if he was being hung out to dry as much by his D or if technically he wasn't there, but we were lucky to get out of that one with 2 points, and I think everybody knew it, including the team and coach.
Let's just let you elaborate there a wee bit. You're talking about the defensive frailties and stuff and some things you've seen. Is there anything in particular? You know, I know last week you were critical, I suppose, as one way of putting it, of a couple of players. What's your sort of own thinking on it at the minute?
The main thing that I can see is ineffectiveness at clearing the defensive zone. I think we're messing around too much in our own zone. We're not coughing the puck out of our zone quick enough. I think we're allowing soft turnovers both in our zone and in the neutral zone, and I think that's what's causing those goals, especially late in the period. It seems to be, it seems to be that within those last couple of minutes of a period that we're mentally already in the locker room, and that's when mistakes happen. Obviously singled out some players. You know, Paddy asked me specifically about Jim Vandermeer, having seen a few people talking about him on Twitter and stuff. I don't know that it's one or maybe two guys' fault. I think it's just an overall attitude, an overall sort of willingness to continue pressing and to close out the period. If I was to pick on one thing, it is just that sort of sluggishness in coming out of our own zone and fanning on D, clearing passes, making silly mental errors that turn the puck over and cause those soft goals. And as I said last week, you know, I don't think it's a question of ability. I think it's just a question of form. I don't know how to fix it. If I did, I would be paid a lot more and I would be a hockey coach. But that's definitely what I'm seeing. I don't know if you boys would agree.
Well, let's talk to a guy who is paid a lot more, and
who we're bringing on.
If you need somebody to talk about ice hockey playing and defense, let's get an ice hockey D-man on from back in the day, Simon.
I, you know, yes, we're making mistakes back there, but I think it's because we're gambling and we're going for a long stretch pass or whatever it may be. I listened to the last week's podcast when Joel was talking about Jimbo, and you know, people might think, I've read the comments on Twitter, and people might think that he's he doesn't look as if he's trying. And that the reason that he doesn't look like he's trying is because he's a Rolls Royce.
Not my words, by the way.
Well, again, when you look at, I mean, I watched him in practice this morning, and he was unreal. He's just so effortless. If you ask the guys in the room, you know, with regards to having a person like Jim Vandermeer on the back end, or would you rather have another? I know I'd rather be playing outside. I think he's unbelievable. Yes, he made a mistake against Five Flyers. It rolled off the end of his stick. But, you know, if you watch the rest of that game, and it was in the second period, I remember watching it and thinking, how can people start thinking that Jim Vandermeer doesn't try and doesn't care? He goes down the right side. I think it was Garside giving him a pass. He dumped the puck in, chased it himself, round behind the net. Boeza, who, let's be honest, the kid's one of the fastest skaters in the league, was away at the blue line with the puck, and Jim caught him before the far blue line. Jim Vandermeer, twice his age nearly, and caught him up. Yes, I agree with the point regarding we're making mistakes and we're turning the puck over probably too easy than what the guys would like to do. But I honestly don't think you can single out one person. I know you did say that just a second ago, but, you know, it's collective. The whole problem starts from the wingers and the centermen. When you're not tracking back, when you're not picking your man up, when you're not playing as a team, you make mistakes. And when you're not open, some guys, I mean, we're 3-0 up at the weekend against Coventry. And you could see that guys were, some of the guys were literally looking right, okay, I'm gonna hang about this blue line here, looking for a jump in behind the defense to try and get the fourth goal. That, you know, that can't happen. You have to stick to the process. Adam is adamant with regards to getting into place, playing the systems, making sure you're doing the right things, you're doing the simple things, and you're doing your own job. But I honestly don't think, I don't get why people are slagging off Jim Vandermeer. I honestly don't get it.
Well, you know, I've had my chats with Michael Owens in person to him about his Vandy stuff on Twitter, so I kind of agree with that. And it's certainly a case of any way you lose as a team, you win as a team. I would never try and single
100%.
Out. Wouldn't single anyone out from a team with up to 20 players in it as being a cause of.
Yeah. Sorry for jumping in. I guarantee you, at the end of that shift, or at the end of that period, when he went into the dressing room, Jimbo was the first to put his hand up and go, sorry, boys, I screwed up there. But we'll get it back. And we got it back. I think he's a
I mean, honestly, nor would I. You know, obviously, the Vandermeer question came up from Paddy last week as a result of sort of people having discussed it. But genuinely, I would agree with you guys. I'm definitely not the poster boy for singling out Vandy or Rayner or whatever. I just think that it's a common problem that seems to be happening throughout the decor, those sort of mental lapses or whatever else. But 100% agree. I would much rather have Vandy in this team this year than not.
Let's go to you, Joel. First of all, Hache's knee, as it's been subsequently called and suspended for by Dobbs on Paddy Dwyer.
Dobbs. Dobbs. Dobbs.
Yeah, it's sickening. You could tell as soon as you saw it that it was a bad hit, completely avoidable, knee-on-knee contact, the type of hit that you just don't need in the game and that needs to be scrubbed from the game. It causes completely unnecessary injuries. And, you know, I don't like to be the first to jump on refs, and I know that it's a call that you need to make in the heat of the moment, but even in the way that Pat Dwyer spiraled and cartwheeled and went down, that should have told you enough about the nature of the contact and where the contact occurred. And the fact that it was a 2-minute tripping call was just an absolute disgrace. I'm sorry. It was a horrendous call. And you know, the concern about Paddy Dwyer was rife throughout the weekend. With my fingers firmly crossed, it doesn't seem like we're going to lose him for any sort of long period of time. And thank God, you know, he's absolutely crucial to this team on the stretch. I'm glad that Dobbs stepped in, but there's a very serious risk there of completely losing a game whenever you make a call like that. And I maybe would have liked to have seen someone step up and maybe jump in for Paddy there. That's the kind of call, the kind of hit, first of all, that cannot go unaddressed in a game, and the kind of call that just completely boggles my mind. It was a really, real bad one.
I suppose the only thing I would say before I come across to you, Simon, for your thoughts on it, I think the closest person, and I'm just thinking of the video in my head, it's either Swinney or McFall, because that size of guy is skated over. He's quite a distance away from it. And as you know, he skates and he ragdolls him even there. He's sitting for 17 minutes.
Yeah, it's true. And so in a tight game. Yeah.
That is, and what was a tight game at that stage. Don't get me wrong. I'm the first one that's up shouting for somebody to do, you know, give somebody a slap. But, you know, from that point of view, you can see why people don't mount. But as you say, just skate over and give him a bit of a face wash even.
He needs more than a face wash.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, Joel's 100% right. That can't go unpunished. We've still got to play him three times this for the remainder of the season. Hache, you know, I think he's made a couple of dodgy hits this season. You know, that was, let's be honest, Swinney or McFall, whoever was on the ice, I don't care how far they are away, they've got to get in his face straight away. Absolutely straight away. You know, Paddy Dwyer's been one of our star players this season. And when your star player's hit, you've got to stand up for him. So for me, let me just, I'll put it another way for you. If Adam Keefe's on the ice 4 years ago, 3 years ago, it could be 200 feet away from him. He's coming straight in there.
I agree here. Sorry for cutting across you. 4 years ago, Adam Keefe takes a 5-minute major for fighting for that. Would Adam Keefe, I'm losing Paddy Dwyer potentially for the rest of the game, doesn't know at that stage. Do you want to lose? There's 20 minutes left in the game. Do you want to lose one of your? Would you want to lose Kendall McFall for 17 minutes as well?
potentially. Do you know what? And in a situation like that, I think it's worth it. Absolutely. You're sticking up for a teammate. You will never have a coach that's going to chew your for doing that.
By
no
the way,
way.
I'm playing devil's advocate because I'm hosting the show. If I was sitting in that seat tonight, I would be 100% in agreement with you. But got to have some, you know, Joel on the instigator call. And, you know, the referees are not going to let that go without an instigator if somebody comes in there.
No, and if you look at the game situation, there's a fair shout for both sides of this coin. You know, it's what, 4-4. We are just on our way out of a 5-on-3. You know, Vandermeer had sat for elbow and Josh Roach took a slashing call. The penalty kill unit brought it back to 5-on-4. And then, I know, sorry, the 2-minute call on Hasher brought it back to 5-on-4. So we're killing a 5-on-3 at that point in a 4-4 game. And it's a wild game. You know, there are penalties flying everywhere. There are goals flying everywhere. I can see the argument for letting that go and for trying to concentrate on the scoreboard. But on the flip side, we've seen it once or twice this season where an occurrence like that or somebody dropping the gloves and fighting at that point. Look at the Clan game whenever Jimbo fought down against the boards in the East End. You know, that completely flipped that game on its head. It energized the crowd. It energized the boys. I don't know. It's probably the lack of hockey intelligence compared to people who get paid to do this for a living and coach it for a living. But it just seems like one of those instances to me where there should have been a yard sale. You know, there should have been gloves flying, helmets flying all over the ice. But I do get that situationally we are backs against the wall there, and that it may have been a bit more sensible to let it go and to play the scoreboard.
The game has changed, to be fair. Like says, you know, early 90s up in the ice bowl there, somebody gets found a skip the next day.
No comment.
Yeah, so like, right, let's look on to the highlight action of the game. You know, Blair Riley goes in along the boards, plays it back towards his own zone. Lenny throws it up the boards. It's kind of picked off. Darcy Murphy picks it up and dangles it, Joel.
Six goals scored by number 15. One step for the Chelsea, Darcy Murphy!
Goal of the season contender, just full stop. Goal of the season contender. He picks that puck up sort of in the low slot in his own zone, and he wheels around and just dances. It's the intensity that you can see in his hands. He is a man possessed, skating the gut there, straight up the middle, splits the entire Coventry forward and D lines in two, and the coolest finish past Hackett you've ever seen. It absolutely sent the crowd crazy. Another all-time call by Simon Kitchen as well. Absolutely loved it. I wish I could have heard it at the time. It was brilliant, but just one of those moments you'll look back. You know, if this season, God willing, knocking on wood, goes the way we want it to, you'll look back on that as one of those clutch moments that just kept us in it.
Says.
Yeah, it was a great goal. I mean, the kid's been doing it all season, and you know, he's beat his totals already for last year. He's leading the team in points. He's, you know, everything he seems to do at the minute, it's turned out, and it's always good to do it in front of family and friends. He texted me on Friday night, the night before the game, and said that he was going out on Monday night with himself, Lenny, and all the family and friends. There's 30 of them over, and would it be okay if he missed the ball? And I said, I'll only like to miss the ball if you score a goal tomorrow night. And honestly, I've got the text there to show it, to prove it. And when he came out of the dressing room on Saturday night, he says, I got the goal for him. I mean, you'll do me, kid.
Are you claiming that one, Sizzy?
Absolutely. I won an assist on that day. He put that down in the stats.
I'll tell you this, Sizz, there's been some assists this season that are a little less tenuous, so you can probably have it if you want.
Joined by Jonathan Ferland Tuesday morning. Ferdy, 4 points from the weekend. Two performances with lots of goals, but giving up 10 goals over the weekend. I'm sure the one of the points this week is going to be trying to tighten up and make less mistakes during the game, because mistakes always happen.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you don't want to give up like 5 goals a game, because you're going to be in trouble down the line. But we were struggling to score a goal lately, so we didn't think the game before, if we take away the 9-2, we had like 12 goals in 5 games. So it's good that we got scoring again. But if you want to be successful every night, you have to count on your defense, because it's one thing you can be sure about it, that you, game starts 0-0, so if you keep them to one or two goals, you got a better chance to win. And so we for sure we're going to work on it. We talk about it. And it's just little things. And during the year, you always have to adjust and the different stuff. And now that's what we have to look at.
The head coach is away for a few days with Team GB.
Yep.
But it doesn't look as if the boys are taking it easy. It looks as if it was a tough practice today.
Well, we wanted to keep it not too long, but high tempo, like get the guys skating, moving on the ice, and a lot of throw drill, battle drill as well, and a little skate at the end. It's good. We had a day off after the two game this weekend, and we don't get to practice a lot lately, so we wanted to get the best out of it. And tomorrow it's going to be optional for the guys, so if the guys wants to go on the ice, they can, if they want to go hit the gym or do something else. But so that's why we push a little harder today. And on Thursday, we're going to focus more on team stuff, like you just said. We want to look at the mistake we've been doing during the last couple of games and work on it on Thursday, 5-on-5 plays and game situation, and make sure we're ready for a really big weekend again.
3-3, two against Guildford, and then you face the Panthers on an away trip on Sunday. It's always difficult, but I'm sure the boys will be well up for it.
Yeah, for sure. It's 3-3 is never easy, but like we talked before, like we talked in the room, the only thing we can focus on is the first game, and Friday night we can only win one game, so we got to focus on this one, make sure we play well as a team, as a group, in the system, so build the confidence for the week two, for the three games. If we play well the first game, usually it's get the boys going the right way, in the right direction. We're going to have a good start on Friday, and if we do that, we're going to be successful. But for sure, we just have to focus on that first game, and then we'll move forward to the next one when we're there.
Jordan Smotherman came in on Sunday, picked himself up a goal, and shared the first practice day with the guys. How's he looking?
He's looking good. Another big body. That's good. And in this league, because we saw on Sunday against Nottingham, it was physical, a lot of hit, a lot of battle around the wall, and he seems to be really strong in that area, so we can use him down low and stuff. And he's got a good head, good hands, he can make plays, I think, from what we saw right now. So he's going to be a really big addition for us.
Joined by Josh Roach after Tuesday morning's practice, the January Player of the Month for A View from the Bridge, and the champion bowler for the OSE event last night. It's been a good weekend for you.
Yeah, you know, my parents are in town, so I had to put on a show for them. And, you know, we were able to get a couple big wins this weekend. And then, like you said, last night I was on my game bowling, so it doesn't happen often, but I'll take it.
You were 17 pins behind Jim Vandermeer getting into the second game, but coming up with a big score of 187, and you took the plaudits. So you're going to have a bit of bragging rights in the dressing room today?
Yeah, I think so. You know, the boys are giving me a hard time saying I was using the bumpers, but whatever it takes to win, I guess. They didn't get that 50 quid, so I'll take it.
Moving on to this weekend, three games. You faced the Guildford Flames already this season with success, and obviously you tripped to Nottingham after facing them this weekend, but the boys are in good spirits.
Yeah, you know, definitely. Anytime we can get a good weekend like we did, a couple wins, that definitely is good for team morale. You know, things are tight at the top, so these next three games are going to be huge for us, especially the two at home.
Moving down the stretch, games are ticking away. Just the 3 points behind the Cardiff Devils now. Just taking one game at a time?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, we got them back-to-back at home here in a couple weeks, so, you know, if we can continue to tweak our game and then go into that weekend feeling good about ourselves, it should be a good matchup.
There, look, that's a great 2 points for the Belfast Giants. And we moved on the next Sunday, obviously 22 minutes past four the following day. We dropped the first puck against the Nottingham Panthers, rushed into a two-goal lead, pegged back to 2-each, stretched it out to 4-2, pegged back to 4-3, 4-each, and it all got very exciting. The Giants have stretched out towards the end of the game there and made it, what did they end up, 8-5 goals from... Let's see here. Let's go down them. Kyle Bond, Dustin Johnner, Kyle Bond again, Darcy Murphy, Dustin Johnner making it a hat trick. Kyle Bond making it a hat trick. The first double hat trick game since 2003, when Brad Kenny and Paxton Schulte scored in a 10-4 win over the Dizzying Stoke Bison, and rounded out with a goal from the new guy, Jordan Smotherman. number 29, wearing the blood shirt while he was waiting for his own kit to be done up, because he came in at very short notice. We'll talk about that a little later. Let's talk about the game first, Simon. You know, jumping out that lead and then getting pegged back, hardly ideal.
Yeah, again, we get off to another great start. And, you know, the Panthers, look, the Panthers haven't had the best of season, but we all know that they can be dangerous. It was the fifth game against them this season. We beat them three times. They beat us in the first game of the season away. And, you know, when Garnett really did keep them in it at stages. And then, you know, when they got it back to 4-4, to be honest, I thought Besko was outstanding. They had a couple of really big chances to go ahead, and Besko stood tall and managed to keep the puck out of the net and get into the end of the second period, I think it was, at 4-4. But, you know, we can't keep on doing that. We can't keep on making mistakes. Yes, you're gambling for a pass up the middle or you're knocking one off the wall. But, you know, Chris Stewart, their new guy that came in there, I think it was 10 or 12 games ago, he had a brilliant game. You know, he's a big boy. And I don't think he gets about the ice anywhere near as what he was doing when he was in the NHL. But he's a smart, smart player. Playing on the line with Perlini and Farmer. You know, we know that Farmer's the guy you love to hate. I would love to see him in a Belfast Giants uniform. I genuinely would. And Perlini's, you know, he's their poster boy. He's had him for a couple of years now. They play for GB. And, you know, the two really, really good British players. But then Dustin Johnner pops up with a power play just into the third period. We managed to get, you know, the other goal from, was that Johnner as well? Was that his hat-trick goal?
Yeah.
They make it 6-4. And then they gamble. You know, there's 3 minutes left in the game. They pull their goalie. They get it back to 6-5. 20 seconds later, Kyle Bond finishes his hat-trick off as well. And great to see Jordan Smotherman using Spiro Galacho's sticks, because his sticks haven't turned up. you know, awesome. getting a stick that, I was speaking to Taff on Sunday after the game, and he was saying about the sticks, and Jordan, when he got the sticks, he actually couldn't remember where, actually, you know, because of his having arrived back from Germany, he was wondering where he cuts the stick, and he thinks he cut the first one about 3 inches short than what it should have been. And then Taff gave him another one at the start of the third period, and he ends up scoring the goal. So Taff's looking to assist on that one, David. But
just make some notes here.
You know, at the end of I think they were out shooting us after two periods. The Panthers did come back into it. They did, you know, at one stage when it was 4-4. I haven't even been in tied games this year against anybody at the arena. I haven't really thought, you know what, we're going to lose this. But that was probably the closest game. At 4-4, I'm sitting thinking, we really need to dig deep here. And we dug deep. 4 third period goals. Thoroughly deserved to win. A 4-point weekend. Great to see Dustin Johnner getting a hat trick in his 900th professional game. And Kyle Bond, 3 goals, 2 assists. That line of Bond, Rutherford, and Murphy, 13 points in that game against the Panthers. He couldn't score enough against them.
Joel, the Lions got mixed up again a little over the weekend there. Simon talks about the Bond, Murphy, and Rutherford line. Whole lot of points between it. You know, Higgy, Blair Riley, Dustin Johnner. And then I think it was fairly Shades and Smotherman certainly started the game together on that sort of third change up. Hard to argue with what the coach has done there.
No, fantastic. You know, sometimes that shuffle just adds a little bit of what you need. You know, it can get formulaic whenever you stick with your lines for so long. And I think that's something that we possibly were lacking a little bit throughout the Continental Cup weekend and the Cardiff Devils weekend that followed, is that sort of secondary scoring that was beyond the first line of Dwyer, Murphy and Rutherford. And it's great to see, you know, the sort of much maligned Kyle Bond slump. You know, he was lights out. He was on fire at the start of the season. And his points dried up there, and it didn't seem to be through anything that he was doing. His ability seemed to be there. He just didn't seem to be getting the puck lock. He didn't seem to be getting the bounce or the service, or I don't know what it was, but that slump is well and truly over. Kyle Bond is a fantastic forward for this team this year, and I'm glad we have him. You know, the shuffle worked, thank goodness. You know, we're down Patrick Dwyer. You have a new player coming in. It's that sort of unknown, and it could have gone either way. As much as Garnett was fantastic for Nottingham, a couple of absolutely mind-bending glove saves. But as much as he was great, I think Tyler Bescarwani kept us in that game for long spells towards the end. Chris Stewart was easily the best outing since he arrived in the Elite League. I think he was something like, what, you can maybe tell me, Dibby. I think he was like 2 points, maybe 3 points in 10 games before he came in. And he got more points in that single game than he had his entire stretch in the Elite League so far. He was absolutely fantastic. But all in all, again, just it was a wild game, to be honest. I was typing my wee guts out trying to keep up with it, similar to the Coventry game on the Saturday night. A fantastic fairy tale ending as well, after a double hat trick, and that is a fantastic stat, by the way, the first since 2003, absolutely unreal. And then whenever you add the fact that it's Dustin Johnner's 900th professional game, and it was on his wee daughter's birthday, she was up on the big screen having a great time. Just one of those lovely kind of moments where everything comes together, and then the fairy tale ending of Jordan Smotherman straight off the plane. And as he says in the post-game interviews, the eighth goal is always the most important, right? Just a really lovely and well-deserved reward for him. I tell you what, if you want to make me fall in love with a Belfast giant, that is how you do it. A guy that's watching the webcast sees Patrick Dwyer go down and figures that Adam Keefe might need an extra body the next day. Retire the blood jersey. Retire the 29, boys. I want to see it in the rafters.
Let's talk about that, says, Jordan Smotherman was supposed to be coming in at the start of the week here, and As Joel said there, he's watching the webcast on Saturday night or Friday. Saturday night, getting to know his new teammates, what the setup for the Belfast Giants is. Probably been watching them for a few weeks as we've been talking to him, as you know, and decides off his own bat, I'm gonna get onto the airport here and see if I can get into Belfast for tomorrow. The boys might need me.
Yeah, he was all booked to come in on Monday at lunchtime, alongside his wife, and I got an email from Thorts on Friday night asking me could we get him arranged to get him picked up. So it was all sorted. And then after Dwyer went down, just as you say, he's been, this obviously has been looking to try and get this happen. These moves don't happen overnight, but he's been to get Thorts and Adam been speaking to him over the last number of weeks. And I was speaking to him, I took him to pick his wife up yesterday. When things like that come in, Joel's 100% right. When things like that happen, and he, off his own bat, his own money, goes on top of the flight that he's already got booked by the team to come in, sees a teammate go down who he's never met before. He could say it as clear as day from Amsterdam, and yet we've two officials on the ice that call a two-minute tripping call. he basically knew that Paddy Dwyer was hurt, so he get on the internet, he booked a flight to come into Belfast from Amsterdam. He drove for 5 hours from Germany to get to Amsterdam, to get the flight, left at, I think it was 3 a.m. For a 12 p.m. flight to Belfast, gets in 2.5 hours before face-off, he's never met 16 of the 18 guys that he goes on the ice with, and then he scores the eighth goal. I don't care who you are. I don't care what sport you're involved in. I don't care what team you support. But I'll tell you what, he has bought into this full pelt, and I think it's absolutely brilliant what he did.
And as great as Smotherman was doing what he did, obviously the sad news, I guess, coming off the back of that is that Hunter Bishop has decided now is the time to call it a career as far as on-ice skating goes. He's obviously taken a job up with the Colonials there in Charleston, his hometown. He'll get back to have a bit of sun on his back next autumn. And, I think Bish goes with everybody's best wishes, Sam.
Of course. We talked about it with Boxy earlier. Such a top lad, a real, real good lad. Bought into what it was coming, and unfortunately just didn't go his way. Couple of unlucky bounces. We I don't know if you remember the goal. I think it was a shorthanded goal he scored away at Dundee. It was unreal. It was one of the best goals I've seen all season. Dipsy Doodle, the whole length of the ice, cuts down the left side, it makes the D-man look like a complete and then slots it through the five hole. And you're sitting thinking, right, this is him ready to go. And he just couldn't find that extra step. We all knew he'd speed the burn. He's a wicked wrist shot. But more importantly, I think he was because he was a healthy scratch a couple of times, and even Boxy said, the attitude that he had when he was a healthy scratcher, or if somebody was out hurt, there was not a better teammate. He was just always positive, trying to keep things going the right way for the team. sorry to see him go. Real, real nice guy. Real, real top player. I thought he was excellent, but unfortunately for him, it just didn't go the way he wanted to. Wish him all the best of luck for his head coach and general manager of the junior team in Charlotte.
Joel, the Bish.
Yeah, David, I have to hand it to you. You know, as the official of Even the Bridge spokesperson on Hunter Bishop from the DNR that he signed, as good as your introductory piece to him and your sort of deep dive into his career was, the sort of farewell that you penned to him on Kingdom of the Giants this week was a fantastic read. So a tip of the hat to you. It's one thing that keeps coming up about Bish, model professional. If you speak to anyone from like Austin, Robbie, Steve the Pirate, the backroom staff at the Giants, the guys that are around practice and are around on game day and are around the arena, right through to the coaching staff and his teammates, all you hear is about how hard he worked in practice, how good he looked all the time in practice, and just he was a model professional, and he, as you say, he came to work with a smile on his face every day. A fantastic guy as well. Genuinely enjoyed any chance I had a chance to speak to him. An absolutely beautiful family. His wee kid Brody is just a total sweetheart. And as you guys say, you know, he has an opportunity now to translate his playing career into something a bit more long term that keeps him involved in the game, and you can do nothing but thank him for what he's given to the team and wish him all the very best, and we hope to keep in touch. You know, he contributed a lot this year, and he's one of those players that I don't think you can measure in elite prospects terms. You can't look at his points to sum up what he contributes to a team. You know, the contribution you make to a team as a player, it starts whenever you roll into practice in the morning. It's whenever you're with the boys after games. It's when you're on the road in hotels and buses. And to me, he just seemed like one of those guys who rolled with the punches. He always acted for the good of the team. He was frustrated by those healthy scratches. You could tell he didn't want to be scratched, but he understood that that's the way it had to be at the time. So with that said, he was a grinder. He was a guy that did his bit and tried his very best, and I wish him nothing but the very best.
There's a 2-on-1 chance here. Steps inside. Hunter Bishop shot. He gets his goal! Hunter Bishop's first of the season. Lovely play at the red line by Dustin Johnner. Fed it inside to Kyle Bond. 2-on-1. And Bishop puts the chance 5-1 up.
I think he watched where Kendall McFarland plays his, because he puts it in exactly the same corner, low blocker. And that's a pure goal scorer's finish. Great play by Johnner, great play by Bonner to feed Hunter coming in, and he makes no mistake on that one.
His first goal as a Giant. I'm sure David McGimsey will be pleased.
I'm sure Hunter Bishop will be pleased.
Absolutely.
Right, so we're going to move on now from the Hunter Bishop chat, and we're going to have a look around the league, and there's been a goaltending change, so who better to call up than a goaltender? Andrew Dixon, welcome back to View from the Bridge.
Well, thank you for having me.
Dicko, going to throw this one at you, because I don't know if you've seen the Sheffield Steelers tonight announced a new goaltender.
I knew about it on Friday.
There you go. Well, you never told us. You kept that to yourself. Carson Chubak's back in the league.
Mm-hmm. So between him and West, they'll have a hit between them. So I can say that because they're both my mates, so it's okay. So, but yeah, I heard that last week actually, that I heard that he was over and he'd been training and everything out there. So I wasn't sure if they were able to get a deal done, or the visa, or whatever they needed done, because it's not easy to get a visa, I think, if you haven't played in a while. And obviously he hasn't played since he played in Edinburgh. So yeah, I guess he got the visa done. So I'm happy to see, you know, Chubbs, you know, back playing hockey, doing what he wants to do. You know, it's not, you never want to see a guy have to step away from hockey because of an injury. So it's good to see him getting past his, you know, his health problems and back playing the sport he loves.
Dicko, I had a wee interview with Stephen Murphy, that guy that you've been, chilling out with for the last 9 years, for Giants TV the other day, and he was telling us a few stories about him. So instead of me asking any questions, I want to hear some of your best Stephen Murphy stories. I'm sure Joel would be right up for this as well.
You know the thing, Murph's so sneaky, man. Like, he doesn't get caught doing things. And if he does want something, like, done, he'll get his puppy, me, to do it. So, you know, for a night out, he'll send me to do it, and I end up doing it for him. And then, you know, I think it's great, and everyone's having a laugh, and he takes no responsibility in it, and then it all falls back on me. But I don't know. I don't actually have that many stories about him. I know that's ridiculous after 9 years, but Yeah, honestly, if he wants his dirty work done, he gets me to do it. So that's basically how it works around here. So if I tell a story, I'm really just throwing myself under the bus, if I'm honest.
So it's basically, it's a matter of him making the snowballs and you firing them.
Well, yeah, I mean, he'll not only will I fire them, he'll tell me where to throw them, how high to throw them, who to throw them at, and I'm quite happy to do it, you know?
Do you know what it is, though? Like, Dicko, I don't know, if you're a fan up in the stands and you obviously don't have that peek behind the curtain, you just assume from the way you both get on with each other that you're together like a married couple, and it's actually true. Like, I rang you in the preseason this year whenever you had signed for a chat, and I was like, are you okay to talk now? Are you okay, mate? It sounded like you were in a car, and you were like, yeah, it's okay. I'm just with Murph here. What were you doing? You were doing something ridiculous, like going and looking at puppies or at the driving range or something. I don't even know. How much time in a week? What was it?
It wasn't puppies. It was putters at the driving range. But yeah, so putters, puppies, whatever. But yeah, I've literally just came back from the driving range outside, but he wouldn't come tonight because apparently he's got a lesson or something, or, you know, he's doing something with school or something like that there. So he didn't come tonight. So, you know, that's fine. He's a little better than me at golf anyway because his dad was a golf pro. So I've got a little bit of catching up to do. So I was down at the driving range and I actually said I would give my friend JJ, who plays out in Arizona State, I told him I'd give him a big shout out on the podcast because he listens to it all the time. So that's me and Murph, you know. It's just, I don't know, we just get on well, you know. You've got those like personalities that sort of go well. We do the same sort of music, and then obviously, like, without being funny, and you know he obviously looked after me a lot in my, you know, early career and showed me the ropes, and so obviously now, you know, we're getting up to his testimonial, and you know, I'm very proud of everything he's achieved here in Belfast. But yeah, you're right, we're like a married couple, but like most married couples, you know, don't want to hang out with each other anymore. And after 9 years, most marriages are over and ours are still going, so we're doing okay.
It's a beautiful thing. Take me back, Dicko, to the very, very start, whenever you first started working with Murph. Do you have any kind of early memories of him, how he introduced himself to you, those kind of early days? Did you guys click kind of straight away? Did you just know, yeah, we're pretty much the same person here, this is going to be a thing?
Well, same person minus a little bit of, you know, he might be a little bit better at me at the old net minding, but, you know, what happened was, I got signed, well, I wouldn't even say signed, I quit my job to come and train for a week with the Giants because they wouldn't give me the time off work to come and do it. So we were playing like Newcastle and like an Irish select team back in like 2009, I think it was, and Murph was hurt coming into the season. He had knee surgery, so Nathan Craze was, you know, set to start the season, and they needed a goalie to back Crazer up, so that's where I came in. And because in Dundonald, we've obviously Taft's done a great job, and he's fixed the room up, but back then it was like half the room it was now, so we didn't have enough seats for the players. So what they'd done was, they just like made me like a makeshift stall in the corner beside Murph, so I had like a seat, a coat hanger, and I don't know. So I would like sit beside Murph, and obviously, you know, if you're sitting beside him, you just get talking to the guys who are beside you, and you know, it was good fun. They used to always like hide my pads and stuff like that there. So that's basically how he got lumped with me. Basically, I got stuck beside him in the, I'm not even going to tell you what. Well, it was like a bit of a cave in the corner. It was basically beside the coffee machine. So it just squashed me into the corner, and that was basically how I got lumped with Murph. But then, you know, I thought I was only going to be there for maybe like a week, and then after the week I got, you know, asked back for another week, and that's when I started like picking Murph's brain about, you know, how you know about net minding, what can I do, how can I do this better. And then I remember like back then I didn't really have a contract or anything. I was registered to play, but so I didn't get sticks and stuff like that there. Taff would give me the odd stick, and I was like, I need some sticks, Murph. And he's like, oh, well, I've got a school visit today. So he ended up treating me. If I'd done his school visits, he would give me his old sticks. So I was out doing his like school visits, and God bless Gordy. He had no idea who I was. And Murph's like, yeah, this kid Dicko was going to do the school visit. So Gordy was not impressed. But yeah, so he treated me school visits for sticks. So that tells you a lot about it. That's the Scottish in him, though.
Dicko, let's stick with Murph before we go on to any other subjects. Testimonial, mm-hmm. Obviously coming up in the next few weeks. I'm going to throw a few numbers at you. Numbers are important when you're looking at a goaltender. They're not the be-all and end-all, but 427 games for the Giant, 9.12 save percentage, or 0.912, whatever way you want to look at it.
Yeah.
You know, less than 1,000 goals against, 25,000 minutes, fucking how many saves? 10,500 saves. He's 26 shutouts. You know, he leads pretty much in most of the stats. He's been phenomenal, and for to do it for that long.
Then the other big ones, first British goalie to win a league, you know, twice. Great Britain games thrown in there as well, you know. Games that probably aren't registered if you think about the amount of games he played before he even came to Belfast. Like,
purely Belfast, yeah.
Yeah, like, but if you, I know, because if you factor in the fact that he basically turned pro when he was about 15, when the rest of us are still, you know, doing our GCSEs, and he's out playing for Fife, which back in the day were, you know, a good team like they are today. I know they had a little dip after that, but they, it's mind blowing, the sort of the numbers and the longevity and how he's been able to stay at the peak, you know, of British ice hockey for so long. And must be in the family, because obviously you just have to look at Colin Shields as well, you know. Shields in his late 30s, and obviously he's the same, all-time points leader, and Great Britain all-time points leader as well. So it shows you, those guys, they must have been playing a lot when they were younger. And I've heard them talking about Murph's, you know, his mum remarried, so he's got two dads, and one of his dads was a hockey pro and the other one was a golf pro, so he's kind of blessed that way. And same with Shedzi's dad played hockey as well, so they all come from that family and they were kind of brought up in that situation, so I think that helped a lot during the way. But yeah, in terms of Belfast, we haven't had a goalie like him. Obviously we've had great goalies, but no one who's been around that long and achieved as much and put their body through as much as what Murph has for the team.
Deco, tell us a story about when you were in the locker, or you got the call, and Murph had it cut his hand cutting an apple, and tell us about that. That's a cracker, like.
That's the old great. Oh yeah, it was Wally, wasn't it? Wally was the coach.
Yeah.
There's been a few. He's, you know, giving me heart attacks. Like, basically, I think. I don't know if we were on the road or anything. I can't really remember, but we came to the rink, and I came in or whatever. And
I think we were at home against Edinburgh.
We were against Edinburgh, and you know what made it even worse? It was the game that we were about to play overtime because they forgot to play overtime in a game, in a Challenge Cup game. So the game was about to start with sudden death overtime against Carson Chewback, funnily enough. And so yeah, I come in the locker room. And then I think someone rings down or whatever, so Wally comes in, and the boys give me a lot of stick about this. And I'm sitting in my stall, Spetsco's stall now, which is beside Murph. And he goes, Murph just cut his hand, maybe not in as polite as that. I was like, what? He actually said, Murph's in the hospital. And I was like, what? What do you mean he's in the hospital? And his wife was pregnant at the time, so I thought maybe they were going into labour or something out there. Oh, he's cut his hand, cutting an apple or something out there. So obviously I had some choice words, and the second he was like, right, Dicko, you're going. I was like, oh no. So I was like reaching up and I like grabbed my inhaler, and obviously everyone's watching me, and I like ripped like three puffs of the inhaler. So now every time, even that last game against whoever it was, Dundee, I was going to play the third period, Kiefer comes in the room and he goes, right, Dicko, take your inhaler, you're up, you know. So now it's like a bit of a saying around the dressing room now. So he's done it a few times. Like, I remember that time we were playing Cardiff, and like 30 seconds into the game, he like blew his groin, and the people give me a lot of stick. Like, the headline was going to be Murph blows his groin, Dicko has heart failure, you know. So, he's done it to me a few times, but you know, I didn't even play that Edinburgh game. He ended up playing it, you know. So, and we won both the games, you know. But yeah, there you are. He's done it to me a few times.
Indeed. 4-2 win and a 5-2 win. So back onto this year, Dicko, and you've been very lucky over the years you've played with the Giants. It's mostly been Stephen Murphy, but there's been some great goaltenders that have came in here. You know, Zemlak came in for a little short while. You know, you've talked about your relationship with Chubbs there, and you know, this season I think we've been blessed to have one of the best the club's ever had in Tyler Bescarwani. He must be pretty fun to learn off as well as just sit and watch every day.
Yeah, he's a different sort of goaltender than we've seen before. He's he's the modern goaltender, and I was saying that in preseason, he looks like he's going to be the. I'd only seen him about two practices back then, and I said, you know, he looks like he plays big. He's a big guy. But what actually impresses me more about Besko is just how much fun he looks like he's having when he's playing the game. He, you know, you never see him worried, or you know, even if a goal goes in, he's never snapping or anything like that. There, he's always having a laugh. In the dressing room before, in preseason, I was like, oh, he's kind of loose for a game, and I thought it was just because it was a preseason game, you know. But in reality, it's because he's just, you know, he's quite ice cool that way in terms of whenever he's playing, he doesn't get worried. Not that Murph did either. Murph was like a quiet can. My best goal would talk. He would talk to me, or if I was backing him up or whoever, and he wouldn't be shy to talk to other guys on the team, which a lot of goalies won't do. Chubbs wouldn't do that. Chubbs would never speak. Wiss would talk a little bit. Zemmer wouldn't talk. I certainly wouldn't talk for a week. He's so ice cool. That's the way I would put it. And you can see him whenever he skates sometimes for a delayed penalty. He does that freeze, you know, as if he's like... He's having a laugh at Taft. He must have a joke in there somewhere. I don't actually know, but I'll find out for you for next time. And so he's so ice cold. And obviously, you know, the talent speaks for itself. He's so good with his gloves. He's so good with his positioning. He makes saves that, you know, goaltenders make look hard. He makes it look easy, you know, which is a mark of a good goalie. I think, you know, the Giants will like to see him in our crease for as long as possible because he's just a top-notch goaltender.
Deco, we're going to finish off with some quick-fire questions. Okay. Some of the boys have done this now in the last few weeks. So these are all put together by Jasmine Kitchen. No idea who she is.
Okay.
So what's your favourite hobby outside of hockey?
Golf.
What's your favourite thing about someone in your family?
Oh, I don't know. My family annoy me. that I have to like them.
Describe yourself in three words.
Scruffy, loyal, and funny. I'm half funny, I know what I am.
Beautiful.
If you were stuck in the lift with one person, who would you want it to be?
Stephen Murphy.
Oh, romance. What's the last book you read?
The House of Silk, which is like a Sherlock Holmes book.
What's your favourite TV channel, not including Babe Station?
What's the other one? The one after
it? That's a joke question.
It would actually be something stupid like the History Channel.
Great channel, Deco, great channel.
Vikings and all that, you know.
He's like an onion, boys. He's like an onion. He's reading, he's watching the History Channel. This is not the Andrew Dixon that the public think, you know?
Yeah, but you see...
You know something? I'm smarter than I look, you know, which isn't hard, but, yeah.
Okay, next question. Who's the smartest in the room?
Oh, after me. Certainly isn't Adam Keith. Who is it?
Kiefer listens to this every week, you know.
Oh, that's all right. By the way, I plan to fight Kiefer at this testimonial, so, you know, get your tickets, because he's going down. Let me think. I don't know. In our Garside, you see, after Garside's had a beer, I call him the professor. He goes into all these things, and he's just talking nonsense. So he is, but he thinks he's the smartest in the room, anyway.
How long does it take you to get ready in the morning?
About 2 minutes, because I'm always late.
Then that was the next one. Who's always late in the dressing room? We all know it's you anyway. Last one.
It is me.
If you were stranded on a tropical island, what two things would you take with you?
Apart from stuff like a boat. Oh, I don't know. If I can get the PlayStation, I think PlayStation would be one, and just like a big case of Red Bull. That'll keep me going.
So you're stranded on a tropical island and you want to take a PlayStation.
Where are you going to plug it in?
That was my question. Where are you going to plug it into?
So I can just hug it, you know. That's like with the time we went to Angers in the Continental Cup. Me and Murph were coming through the, you know, like the airport scanner thing. And the guy's like, is there anything electrical in there? I'm like, yeah. He's like, okay. I opened up. Stewie was in front of me. I pulled out a PlayStation. He goes, did you boys bring your PlayStation? I was like, yeah. And then I can't even tell you what he said because he wasn't impressed. We're different. Kind of like Slapshot. Brought their toys with them, you know? So.
But, as always, mate, top lad. We really appreciate you coming on. And, you know, we're always looking forward to you. I know you're going to – you were telling me what your plans are for the testimonial, which is upcoming for Murph. We all think it's thoroughly deserved. We're hoping to get him on next week to have a chat about it. But in the meantime, thanks very much for joining us in ABF TV. You're a top lad.
No worries, boys. Have a good one. See you there.
And as Simon says, thank you very much to Andrew Dixon for joining us here. Let's have a quick look back at the weekend there where we're presented the A View from the Bridge, courtesy of Phonocab, Player of the Month for January. And Joel, Player of the Month for January, Josh Roach, what do you think?
Yeah, it's amazing what a few stern threats in an East Belfast accent can do, isn't it? The votes absolutely flew in following the Brigadier's issue of violence to everybody who didn't vote for Josh Roach last week, but completely deserved. He honestly couldn't deserve it anymore. Josh Roach has become a cornerstone of this team. His offensive production is just out of this world. He's racking up points week on week, and I think it's possibly, and you know, you don't need me to tell you, I'm a Blair Riley guy, but it's possibly the most timely and most deserved Player of the Month that we've issued this season. You know, it's just come right at the perfect time for him to acknowledge just the work that he's put in over the last month. Properly well deserved.
Davey, what do you think?
Oh, I said, I think I sent you the stats, Simon, from, you know, I know it's a bit tongue-in-cheek saying he's on a three-month point streak because it was like the 29th of December and it was like the 3rd of February or something, but, you know, essentially he's been on a, you know, whatever it is, 14 game point streak, you know, half a dozen goals, 20 assists or something, you know, great plus minus, very, very few penalties in minutes, you know. He encompasses everything that we needed, you know, from a sort of offensive D-man. He ties up so well with Lenny there. Lenny will mind the shop and let Roachie do his thing. And Lenny's chipped in a couple of times. He's taken, you know, he's taken Roachie's lead there, and he came in at the back door there a couple of weeks ago with a great goal as well. So, you know, they formed a really nice partnership. It's the bedrock. I would say those two are the bedrock which this defence is built upon. You know, we've got really, really good setup there with McFaul and Rayner usually go out together. Vandy and Gary go out together. But those two of Roachie and Lenny start virtually every game for us. They're our go-to first line of defence. You know, I said it all, I don't know if it was last week's podcast, the week before, when I was asked for Player of the Month. For me, there were some outstanding performances through January of Dustin, Johnner. Rayner was very good, you know. But for me, Roachie just, the point streak, okay, you know, I focus sometimes a little bit too much on stats. But, you know, they are very, very good stats to have. And for me, they just elevated them slightly above the other guys in the voting this month.
I think you brought up a point last year in the podcast about Spiro being the quickest to 50 points from as a defenseman.
Yeah.
I don't think that was far off for Roachie to get the 60 points. You have to look at maybe a stat that you can pull out, but
I would have to go for 60 because he certainly wasn't as quick to 50 as Spiro.
Yeah. I mean, he's 60. I think it's 62 points now he has from first year pro. You know, he's an important part of this team. I said at the start of the season, you know, about a month in, I thought he was, you know, potentially going to be our MVP. I thought, you know, I think the kid's got it all. I really do. I do think he can play at a higher level. I'd love to see him stay in Belfast next year and beyond. And I think this is a no-brainer for Player of the Month last month.
Let's move on to this weekend. And trust me, this will be quick because it's the part of the show I absolutely hate. Flames at home, Panthers away. Three games, you can get them if you can't get down to SSE. First of all, get down if you can. Simon, ticket line is
9073-9074.
Nice.
Ticketmaster if you want them. Belfast Giants TV if you're absolutely stuck at home or you cannot get down to SSE. If there's water dividing you and Northern Ireland, then you can get on to the webcast. Sunday night, of course, we don't believe there'll be a webcast. You never know, they might throw up a Sunday showdown on YouTube. That would be brilliant for those that can't attend. But guys, what are you expecting from the games, Joel?
Yeah, it's another 3-3, which is a brutal ask. I'm enjoying this season immensely. It's been a roller coaster. We are sitting level on games now with the Cardiff Devils, and the points gap is 3, and I think we still have to play them twice in a doubleheader, isn't that right? So the league is wide open. This is probably the most thrilling chase to the finish that we've had in a few years. But these 3s and 3s are a huge demand on the body. This season feels like with all of the competition competitions, and with the Continental Cup and everything else, it feels so long. I feel like I'm never out of the arena. So this weekend again is a huge test. It's you could nearly chop this up and say it every week. It's do or die time right now. It's the first to flinch will lose this title. We are going to the very bitter end. And you know, Guildford, a team that are underestimated often in this league, maybe because they're not an arena team, whatever else, but they have a good squad. They have a good club structure, good money behind them, and they're going to challenge us this weekend. And then to have to travel to Nottingham on Sunday after having dealt them a loss in the SSE, you know, they're going to be game for a rematch. It's just the first to flinch between us and Cardiff for me, boys, and it's just go time.
Simon?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's going to be two tough games, Friday, Saturday, and again, it's always difficult in the NIA or NIC or whatever you call it. But Friday, again, one game at a time. Guildford, Friday night. We've got the better of them so far this year. You know, their top line is really good. Like, it's really, really good. Their power play, you know, is probably the most vital part of that group. I think we've got the better of them with regards to the goaltending, you know, their Carosi and Fullerton split the time between them. And I expect that this weekend. I think we'll start one on Friday and then the different one on the Saturday night. So it'd be interesting to see what happens. Friday night's the most important game. Every game from here on in is absolutely massive. Huge games. And, you know, Joel touched on it there, first to flinch. The Cardiff Devils haven't had a great last couple of weeks. Hopefully that continues. I know they've got a couple of big games coming up as well, and then we face them in 2 weeks' time.
And there you go. That's all we're going to talk about the games. But before we close the show out, any other business, Simon?
Yeah, I have a couple, actually. I want to say a couple of big thank yous. The Belfast Giants OSC did a bowling night last night with over 100 people turn up at it. All the players that were still available, obviously the boys are away with GB, and Darcy and Lenny had family over, but everybody else turned up. We talked about Josh Rhodes a few minutes ago as the player of the month last month. He's not a bad bowler either. He had 187 last night in one game. So he was the bowling champion for the players last night. Jonathan Ferdinand's team won the team prize. And as I say, you know, any money raised is certainly going towards your Belfast Giants and one way or another. It depends on which way they want to spend. And all the support we had last night is thoroughly, thoroughly well-deserved and much appreciated. The second part of that, in case anybody else wanted to jump in, the Continental Cup shirts, this goes out tomorrow morning. So tomorrow will be the last day, or today, Wednesday, will be the last day that you can bid on one of the Continental Cup shirts. So both home and away shirts for majority of players are available. They're marked game worn or game prepared. I know there's a couple of guys who didn't make obviously Shane's missed out with the white jerseys in November, and Dicko missed out with both games, but the shirts have been prepared for them. So they're doing great at the minute. Some really, you know, some real good bargains on there for a piece of our history down the years to come. And they're two nice shirts as well. So if you want to bid on that tomorrow, www.giantsauction.co.uk. It finishes at 9 p.m. Wednesday night. So get in, get your bids in, and good luck.
Joel, anything from you, mate?
Well, since you gave me the platform, just a real quick one. Myself and Sis were joined at the weekend there by a really good friend of ours, Wee Ollie. He's only, eight, Sis? I think he's eight. Him and his mum, Laura. I sort of had got in touch with them a few weeks back and met them for the first time. And Wee Ollie's a huge fan of Simon, first of all, and what he does on comms and the podcast and everything that we do as well. So we brought him up to media and we got him involved. He was helping me with the game report. He was on live on TV with Simon in a period break, and he absolutely nailed it. The wee man was just fantastic. Great confidence. And really, really funny, lovely family. His mum Laura, total sweetheart as well. So just a big shout out to Ollie and thank you for all his help. All the boys were really excited to meet him after the game, and we can't wait to see you around.
I'd like to thank everybody that came on the show tonight. Johnny Boxall, who kicked the show off, Andrew Dixon, who came on at half time, Jonathan Ferland, Josh Roach down at training this morning. But of course, there's no show without Punch. Simon Kitchen, thank you very much.
Thanks, David. Cheers, Joel.
Joel, all the best, mate.
Super boys, thanks a lot, appreciate it.
You know that the games are coming up, home and home against the Flames, as we discussed, the Wiggly Panthers. Like, we hope you enjoy your hockey, and we'll catch you next time on A View from the Bridge.
Guys, I have to get off. I genuinely myself.
the steel.